What we're gonna do right here is go back, way back, back into time.
This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue. Welcome to my neighborhood, the Avenue. I grew up here, and each week I'll be sharing the sounds and stories of the people that made the Avenue great. Welcome back to the Avenue. On this week's show, we'll be featuring an hour of words and music from the great Naptown trumpet player, Clifford Ratliff. Clifford Ratliff has been playing jazz music in Indianapolis since the 1960s. And over the years, Clifford has recorded with some of the greatest legends of Indiana Avenue jazz, including Jimmy Cole, James Spalding, Larry Ridley, Hal Wheaton, David Young, and many others. For the next hour, we'll listen to selections from these classic recordings, and we'll also listen back to a 2018 conversation Clifford recorded with WFYI's Kyle Long. Let's start things off with a track from the Small Talk Quintet, an all-star Indianapolis jazz ensemble that featured Clifford Ratliff on trumpet, David Young on sax, Jim Albrecht on bass, Gary Walters on piano, and Josel Carter on drums. From their 1997 album, In Spite of It All, this is Small Talk Quintet with Air. That was the Small Talk Quintet with Air, featuring Clifford Ratliff on trumpet. On this week's show, we're celebrating the music of Clifford Ratliff. Clifford spoke with WFYI's Kyle Long in 2018. The interview was recorded live at the Jazz Kitchen. Let's join their conversation.
Clifford, thank you for doing this. I know you're not a big fan of getting interviewed, you told me.
No, I'm not.
But yeah. First, just to start off, I wanted to learn a little bit more about your early years. You grew up in Indianapolis, right?
Right.
Yeah. Where did you go to school?
I went to school 2317 in Attucks.
Okay. And did you graduate from Attucks?
Yes.
And they have, of course, a very famous music program there that produced a lot of prominent musicians out in the world.
Yeah, Russell Brown.
You studied with Russell Brown?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. What kind of man was he like to study with?
Great. Just kind of hard on you.
He was hard on you?
Oh, yeah. You know, if you didn't play like he wanted to, he snatched the horn out your mouth. But he meant well. He brought a lot of people up, so it was okay.
Yeah. When did you start getting interested in jazz music?
I guess when I was about 13. My brother bought me a couple of albums, The Electrifying Dizzy Gillespie and Miles Davis' Sketches of Spain. And I started listening to it, and I haven't played that much rock since, so.
Yeah.
Well, I was playing with a rock band at that time.
Are you talking about the Highlighters?
Or the Highlighters, too, yeah.
Yeah. What was the rock band you were in?
The Highlighters?
The Highlighters, okay. Mm-hmm. Does anyone out here know the Highlighters? Legendary funk band from Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. When you played with them, though, it was a different sound. Is that right?
Yes, because at first the band name was the Jazzettes.
The Jazzettes.
Right. And from there, other people started joining the group, and it started changing. So I didn't care about playing no more after to listen to the other music. And then when I started hitting the streets, I didn't want to play no more.
How old were you when you were in the Jazzettes?
About 14.
14? Mm-hmm. And what type of tunes would you have been playing at that time?
Jazz Samba by Cannonball Adderley.
And was that your first group that you were part of, your first major group?
Yeah, first group, yeah.
And did you leave? Why did you leave the group? Just because of the changes that were happening in the sound, or you just wanted to try something else?
Well, what happened? I think I was about 15 then, and I started playing with this group at the Hound's Lounge. And when I started playing with them, man, everything was so hip. I said, man, I didn't want to play with them guys no more. So they come up and asked me, what was I going to do? Was I going to play with them or what? I said, I can play with either group. So I just left them alone, and I just stayed with the guys. I played with the older guys.
So you wanted to play straight jazz,
right?
Essentially. Who did you go on to play with after that experience with the Jazzettes and the Highlighters?
Well, by that time...
You said you were playing with older guys, right?
Right. Oh, everybody on the Avenue, I can't remember all their names. There's so many guys. But by that time, I had went to the service in... 66, and I played with a lot of people there. When I went overseas, I played with Mary Lou Williams and Ike Cole.
Wow.
Nat King Cole's brother, yeah. Yeah.
And that was, where were you stationed at the time?
I was in Okinawa.
Okinawa, mm-hmm. Yeah. And they would come through on tour, and would back them up?
They would come through on tour, right.
Yeah. How long did you stay in Okinawa?
Oh, about 8 months.
About 8 months? Mm-hmm. Yeah. When did you come back to Indy?
I came back to Indy in 70.
70?
Right. Wow. April of 70.
Yeah, so you're gone about 4 years. Mm-hmm. Before we move off from this period with the Highlighters in your early years, you came up with that name, right? So that's what I heard. The Highlighters, did you come up with that name?
No, my brothers did.
Your brothers did? Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Well, the Highlighters, the guys used to go out and have fun, draw, drink, and everything. They called it a highlight.
Yeah.
So they said, man, you don't name your band the Highlighters. I said, sound like a good name. And we did.
And you left before they got into the heavy funk sound. But I wanted to ask about a couple artists I think you played with later in your career. Did you play with James Brown at one point?
No. Played with Sam and Dave.
Sam and Dave. Okay. And the Ebony Rhythm Funk campaign.
Ebony Rhythm Funk, yeah.
Do you see any relationship between funk music and jazz? What's your thought on that?
Any relationship? Well, it all goes together. You can take your funk music and just put a different beat to it, and it'll be jazz. You can take jazz, put a different beat to it, it'll be funk. So, it's all about the same, really.
Sure. And you mentioned that you were playing everywhere on the Avenue with everybody. What clubs, what experiences from that time in your life stand out in your mind?
All of them.
All of them?
Yeah.
Where were you playing? Like the Pink Poodle?
I played one time at the Pink Poodle, and I played at the Sunset. I played at Al's British Lounge, the Blue Eagle, and then went up north and played at the Mr. B's. Then they changed his name to the Gunga Den, and then the Honey Dripper. Played the Cactus Club, which was right across the street. Played at the Hubbub, which was further east on 30th Street.
Describe, for younger people listening to this broadcast, describe the atmosphere of the Avenue back then, musically. You mentioned at least half a dozen clubs that were on the Avenue. I know you've mentioned some that were a little farther north, but describe the kind of musical environment of that part of town back then.
Oh, everything was straight ahead, and And the musicians were just simply beautiful. They, if they see y'all in the audience and they knew you played, they would tell you to come on up, come get your horn, come on up. Man, I don't know these songs. Come on up, you hear it. And that's all I've heard all my life, you know, ever since high school, you know, you'll hear it. I even played once with Dave Baker, and I heard him tell some guys, oh, he don't need no music, he'll hear it.
So what do you do when you're up on stage, everybody's looking at you, you don't know the chord changes, you don't know the tune, how do you adapt in that moment?
Well, the good Lord gave me a good set of ears.
A good set of ears?
Yeah. I mean, I use them now, you know. Yeah.
Let's pause and listen to another track featuring Clifford Ratliff on trumpet. In the year 2000, Clifford appeared on a classic Naptown jazz album from Jimmy Cole and Paul Wheaton. The record was titled Now I Know Dreams Do Come True, and we'll hear a track from that album now. This is April Is Pretty. That was Jimmy Cole and Paul Wheaton with April Is Pretty. That track featured the Indianapolis jazz great Clifford Ratliff on trumpet. We've been listening back to a 2018 interview Clifford recorded with WFYI's Kyle Long. Let's return to the conversation.
And we were talking about how do you learn improvising, how do you learn the kind of language of jazz. One way that I believe is important for jazz musicians is through jam sessions like you host and have been hosting here every Monday night at the Jazz Kitchen. I was talking to Phil Randleman recently, and he talked about how important it was for him to be able to sit in at the hubbub with all the different acts that would come through. Was that an important part of the process for you, sitting in on jam sessions?
Oh, yeah,
like
that's how you learn.
Tonight. Yeah.
That's how you learn.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, that's where I met Phil Randleman at the hubbub.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't know how. I don't know how, you know, I was only 15, 16 years old, but I met all those guys, and you know what? I did not get carded until I was 21. That's a trip.
So they just, you bring your horn and they just let you in the club, no questions asked?
Yeah. I played this one club called the 19th Hole. And I drew my little mustache on and got him, the guy, he set me there. And I had a little beer. Of course, boy, I didn't realize everybody could have went to jail. But, you know, but I made it. And I don't know, it was a beautiful life. You know, I wouldn't trade it in for nothing in the world.
Sure. For folks listening that might not understand the format of what you do here on Monday nights, it's kind of like an open mic night.
Right.
People can come in with their instrument, but they get to sit in with professional musicians and really kind of, that might be their first time kind of interacting with professional jazz musicians, and it gives them a chance to kind of see what it's all about. Where were some of the places you mentioned the hubbub, and is that where you met Phil Randleman? Where were some of the places you were going to jam sessions at and kind of developing your skills?
Most of the places had jam sessions, and they would have a jam session from like 5 to 9 or 6 to 10, and then they'll play the regular job after 10. And then I try to get in on all of them. A lot of my, you know, they wouldn't let me in. And but most of them I got in.
So that was a big part of your kind of, the development of your skills as a jazz musician was sitting in on these jam sessions. Learning along with some of the greats.
Yeah, you know, they taught you everything. They taught you to listen real well. And you listen and you get it up here and just come out through your fingers.
Yeah. And I want to talk about some of the recording projects you've done. There's one in particular that I'm really fascinated with, and this might have been your first recording project, I don't know, but you made a very important record with Russell Webster.
Oh, yeah.
Uncle Funkenstein, which was released in 1983. Has anyone heard of Uncle Funkenstein, Russell Webster?
Mm-hmm.
This was a double LP he made that at the time, I don't know if people felt this like this was a significant project, but it really captured a lot of great players together, like Larry Ridley, James Spaulding, Mel Ryan, you.
Mm-hmm.
Who am I forgetting that you played with?
Pookie Johnson.
Pookie Johnson, yeah.
Art Reiner.
Captured a lot of great Indianapolis players coming together to make this music. At the time, I don't think it was very well received, but that record has gone on to become one of the most valuable jazz records ever released. It sells for $4,000.
Yeah, and I can't get a damn.
They reissued it in London, and you didn't get a dime.
Yeah, I got a call from Larry Ridley. Matter of fact, I got a call from Larry Ridley and Jimmy Spaulding. I said, man, you get your money? I said, what money? I said, whatever we got paid that night, that was it.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, it's out in London now. And there's one record sold for $3,000. I said, I wish he had came and got mine. For $3,000? Oh, man, it should be gone.
Musically, though, what did you make of that experience at the time, and how do you feel about it today, looking back on it and realizing the significance of this performance that was captured with these great masters?
Well, everything's a learning experience, you know. You play with guys that have did it all and played with everybody. And just to be able to play with them, period, is a great thing.
Let's pause and listen to the title track from Russell Webster's legendary 1983 album, Uncle Funkenstein, Together Again. This track features an all-star lineup of Avenue musicians, including Mel Ryan on piano, Larry Ridley on bass, Pookie Johnson on tenor sax, Russell Webster on tenor sax, James Spaulding on flute, and Clifford Ratliff on trumpet. Echoes of Indiana Avenue will return with more words and music from Clifford Ratliff after this short break. This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue. On this week's show, we're featuring an hour of words and music from the great Naptown trumpet player Clifford Ratliff. Clifford Ratliff has been playing jazz music in Indianapolis since the 1960s. And over the years, Clifford has recorded with some of the greatest legends of Indiana Avenue jazz, from Jimmy Cole to David Young. We've been listening back to a 2018 interview Clifford recorded with WFYI's Kyle Long. Let's return to their conversation.
Some of the musicians who participated in that Uncle Funkenstein project were part of a contingency of Indianapolis players that went to New York to kind of represent the Indianapolis sound. It's called the Indianapolis Jazz All-Stars. There's a performance at Rutgers University that I believe Dr. Ridley, the great bassist, had set up. And there was also a performance in Harlem at the Adam Clayton Powell Theater. You were part of this, am I right?
I played at the Adam Clayton School.
Okay, yeah, in Harlem.
In Harlem.
As part of this all-star Indianapolis jazz band that included some of the guys we mentioned from Funkenstein, but I think Les the Bear Taylor.
Bear Taylor, yeah.
Was there. Who else?
Slad Hampton.
Killer Ray Appleton.
Killer Ray.
Yeah. Ted Dunbar.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, tell me about being part of this all-star group of Indianapolis jazz musicians that played in New York to educate the people there about the sound back in your hometown.
I never really thought about it.
Yeah?
Because I was just one of them. And it never really, not until you just said it, you know, because I forgot all about it. And but just playing with them guys, they are so cool and down to earth that you just go ahead and play what you got to play and don't worry about it.
Do you have any memories of that experience, hanging out with those guys, playing these gigs in New York?
Oh, yeah, I don't think you want to hear them.
I'm sure some people out there would like to know something.
No, they won't know.
But that's, that must, I mean, it sounds like you don't dwell on it, but that's a huge honor to be a part of this.
Oh, yeah.
This group, right?
Yeah. And just hanging out with all the guys and then running into Freddie Hubbard and running to all the other musicians there, it was pretty different, you know.
So Freddie Hubbard came out to check on what you guys were doing in
New York? We went to Freddie Hubbard. We went to where he was playing.
Okay, yeah.
And he came out and invited us up to play, but after I heard him and Slide hit it, they was playing so fast, I just ducked back in the corner somewhere, you know.
Another project, you know, you're talking about these records that come out overseas and you don't get a penny off of it. I want to mention another.
Oh,
you might
wow.
not even know about this. You played with Billy Wooten for a period of time, correct?
Right.
Yeah. Anybody here know Billy Wooten? Wood and Glass, great vibraphone player. Billy Wooten, you know, never probably achieved, like many musicians here, never achieved the respect he deserved in his hometown. But he's a cult hero overseas, and especially in Japan. And you're on a series of records they put out in Japan, Live at the Madam Walker Theater with the...
At the Madam Walker?
Yeah, Vita Bole, the Latin jazz ensemble.
Now you threw a new one on me.
Evening on the Canal, when you guys played over, I think, at the Historical
Society. That was recorded?
Yeah. And there's some great people.
I still didn't get it down.
And these bands are playing with David Young.
Yeah.
Pookie Johnson. Mm-hmm. A lot of Miles Lloyd, the piano player.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, Larry Clark, the drummer.
Right.
Playing with a lot of great artists. Mm-hmm. This stuff was all recorded, put out in Japan. You didn't get
I didn't know anything, I didn't know anything about it, yeah. Really.
Yeah, tell me about,
you just said it.
Tell me about your time working with Billy Wooten and the projects you were involved with that I just mentioned.
Do you really want to know? Billy Wooten was a different kind of guy.
That's what I've heard. He's a very eccentric man, right?
Oh, man, yeah. And I'll just put it like this. Billy was a cool guy, beautiful to work with at times.
Yeah.
And at times, he wasn't so beautiful to work with.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So I'll just leave that alone.
How about playing with guys like David Young? Had you known him for probably most of your life, right?
Well, I met David at a club on North Meridian. No, I didn't. No, we met at the place called the Honey Dripper. He came in with Jack McDuff. And he was playing with him. That's how I met him. And then right after that was in 70. And I didn't know that I was supposed to check with McDuff because he had wanted me to come to New York to meet him. And I never did because I didn't know about it. Nobody had my phone number, except for Dave Baker. He's the only one that had my phone number and called me. But I missed out on that deal there.
Yeah, but I mentioned these three groups, let's say, Highlighters, Uncle Funkenstein, these different projects with Billy Wooten. You're very humble about the contribution you've made to music here in Indianapolis. But these are projects that have huge international cult followings. The music is appreciated by people around the world. What do you make of that?
I think it's great. I just wish I had known.
Yeah? Well, now that you know, how do you feel about that?
Well,
it'd be nice to make some money off of it, I know, but just kind of as an artist.
No, I wish I had known, you know, just so I could have been able to talk to the guys, because half of them are deceased now. And I didn't know what happened, you know, until you just told me that, you know.
Let's pause and listen to an excerpt from Billy Wilson's 2013 album with the Music Royale Latin Jazz Ensemble. Recorded live at the Madame Walk Theater, this is Billy Wooten with Déjame Soñar, featuring Clifford Radliff on trumpet. Recorded live at the Madame Walker Theater, that was Billy Wooten's Latin Jazz Ensemble, featuring Clifford Radliff on trumpet. Clifford spoke with WFYI's Kyle Long in 2018. The interview was recorded live at the Jazz Kitchen. Let's return to their conversation as they discuss a unique project Clifford recorded in Haiti in 1983.
But there's another album out that I'm on.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, what have I not mentioned recording-wise that you put out, participated in?
I played with a Haitian band in Haiti.
Okay.
And
how did that come about?
A friend of mine named Tom Mitchell, matter of fact, we met down the club here, and asked me, would I take a gig in Haiti? I said, why not? Let's go. I got my passport, and I only had 3 days to make up my mind, and took off. So we stayed there about 3-4 months. We did an album, and I haven't seen the album yet, you know.
What year was that in?
82.
And you were in Port-au-Prince?
Port-au-Prince. Yeah.
Was it compa music? Was it Haitian music?
Haitian music.
Yeah, and you just... like the guitar compa music where they had like three guitar players playing the...
Yeah, that's just what they had. It was just the saxophone player and myself. But the ironic thing was when I first got to Haiti, got off the plane, when they picked me up, they took me straight to rehearsal. From rehearsal, we went to radio studio. Radio. And I had an interview. Man, I said, oh, crap. You know. But since nobody knew who I was, it didn't make any difference then, you know. And the record turned out to be a pretty good success. But I just haven't had a chance to even look it up or
Do you know the name of the group?
Yes, the Magnum Band.
That's a super famous Haitian band. One of the biggest compa bands of the 70s and early 80s.
They never paid me either.
They didn't pay me. Man, I'm sorry to hear that.
No.
But, I'll try to track that down.
Yeah, track it
down. 1982, 83. You'd recognize yourself if you heard it, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
You know, because at that time, I was the only trumpet player, and I had to play 2 to 3 parts. I would play one part, go back to the studio, then I would play a second part, and they mixed it all in together.
They overdubbed it to make it like a full brass section.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
From 1983, this is Clifford Radliff and the Magnum Band with La K. Recorded in Haiti in 1983, that was the Magnum Band, featuring the Naptown jazz great Clifford Ratliff on trumpet. Clifford spoke with WFYI's Cal Long in 2018. Let's return to their conversation.
Obviously, you went to New York with the Indianapolis Jazz All-Stars. Mm-hmm. Did you ever think about, you know, you saw guys like Freddie Hubbard and Larry Ridley and James Spalding out in New York doing their thing. Phil Ranlin was in Detroit and California and other guys here that left. And Claude Barthé was a guy who was here and then went and played with a lot of good groups.
Yeah.
Did you think, I'm going to forget Indianapolis, I'm going to head to Detroit or Chicago and, you know, try to put my stamp on the music scene?
No, not really, because I got married in 74. And my wife got sick, and she was sick off and on, you know, for the past 30 years until she passed away last year. So I just kind of put everything on hold.
So circumstances prevented you from kind of breaking out of Indianapolis, but was that something that, you know, in your inner thoughts you ever dreamed about, that you would like to go try your luck in New York or L.A. or Detroit or Chicago?
No. I really wanted to go back to Europe.
Okay.
Yeah. Europe was where it was happening.
Yeah. What was different about the experience over there that it stuck with you?
Everything was just so down to earth and plush and didn't have a bunch of the racism problem over there, you know, like you got here. Everything was just nice. And I always wanted to go back.
And Clifford, you know, you've had, I mean, I've mentioned all these extraordinary projects you've been a part of, really important locally and internationally, things that really touched a lot of people in the city and around the world. I'm curious, when you look back on your time in music, what stands out in your mind? Which experiences, which musicians that you work with, which project do you feel like really captured something special about you or that was meaningful for you in some way?
To be truthful, I never even think about it.
You don't look back at all?
I don't, you know, well, it's all in the back of my mind anyway. And whenever I go somewhere to play or whatever, all that stuff comes out, you know, what I've seen, what I've heard. It's all in my heart, you know. So I never think about it. Never have thought about it until you just mentioned it.
Yeah. Well, what comes to mind now, like looking back, is there like a particular recording you felt like really captured your playing in a way that you were satisfied with?
No, I just play, and I don't even think about it. I just go ahead and do a gig and wait for the next time I do a gig. You know, I don't think about it.
Yeah. And as I mentioned, you were part of this group, the Indianapolis Jazz All Stars. You went to New York around 1982-83 to represent the
79.
It was 79.
Yeah.
Okay. You went in 79 to represent the Indianapolis sound.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like there is an Indianapolis sound and is that reflected in your playing?
And whether it's reflected in my playing or not, I don't know. But there is an Indianapolis sound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What could you put it into any kind of words at all?
Well, what I could do is, wherever I go, and if I tell them I'm from Indianapolis, first thing that people want to know, did you go to Attucks? I said, yeah. Did you go down the avenue? I said, yeah. I mean, that is great in itself, you know, just to be noted for that, you know.
Sure. Well, thank you, Mr. Ratliff. Man, I'm such
You're
a legend to me. I'm a huge fan of your music and have been for a long time. You're the first person, one of the first people I ever interviewed. I went to your house on your birthday party when you had a big backyard party. This is 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah. God.
And you're very kind and gracious. And, man, I'm a big fan of you as an artist and appreciate you taking time to do this, even though clearly not your favorite activity, jumping up on the microphone.
Yeah, it's kind of different.
Yeah,
I'm like when they tried to talk to Charlie Parker. Mm-hmm. He said, man, I'd rather talk with my horn. You know, and he did. You know, he did just that.
Well, let's leave it at that. Thank you to the Jazz Kitchen, and thank you, Clifford Ratliff. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's all the time we have for this week. Thank you for tuning in. You can meet me here on the Avenue again next week, same time, same place. And you can find the Echoes of Indiana Avenue podcast on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you download your podcast. Echoes of Indiana Avenue is written and produced by Kyle Long and hosted and co-produced by me, Herman Butch Slaughter.
Nobody knows on uptown, baby, like I do. Nobody knows on uptown, baby, like I do. If you will stop and listen, I will tell you a thing or two.